Upfront, inside Atlanta's entertainment industry, is brought to you by Atlanta's Jazz Station, 91.9 FM, WCLK.
Coming up on this week's show, Upfront attended the recent black carpet premiere of Superfly. It is a remake of the classic 1972 American film and stars newcomer Trevor Jackson and Jason Mitchell, alongside veteran actors Michael K. Williams and Issei Morales. The film also features Atlanta hip-hop stars Big Boy and Big Bank Black. I got a chance to chat with them, as well as the film's director, Director X. And closing out today's show is my exclusive interview with fashion and style icon Andre Leon Talley, as he talks about his new documentary, The Gospel According to Andre. The former editor-at-large for Vogue magazine opens up about his legendary career, as well as working alongside Andy Warhol, his admiration for Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., and his iconic photo at Studio 54 dancing with Diana Ross. I will also continue my celebration of Black Music Month, featuring songs from the original Superfly soundtrack, curated by the late, great Curtis Mayfield. Here is this week's casting buzz and entertainment news with Reva Blue.
All right, Mr. DeMille, I'm ready for my close-up.
Rose Locke Casting is looking for extras to fill several roles for the upcoming HBO pilot, Brooklyn. The production is currently looking for African-American women to portray Army women. The actresses should be physically fit with braids in their hair. The production is also looking for men and women of all ethnicities to portray police officers working in a police station. All actors must be available to work on Monday, June 18th. Or Tuesday, June 19th. If this is you, please submit a current photo, your age, height, weight, and contact information to prep@roselockcasting.com with Army or Unique in the subject line of the email. In other related entertainment news, don't forget to tune in to OWN's new romantic drama, Love Is. The one-hour series debuts on Tuesday, June 19th, and follows a modern-day power couple in Black Hollywood, balancing successful careers and family during the 1990s. Love Is stars Michelle Weaver and Will Catlett, along with Tyrone Marshall Brown and Idara Victor. Veteran actors Vanessa Bell Calloway, Tim Reed, Kadeem Hardison, and Loretta Devine round out the cast. That's this week's Casting Buzz and Entertainment News. I'm Reva Blue.
Support for WCLK programming comes from the Wolf Creek Amphitheater, presenting an evening of smooth jazz on Saturday, June 23rd, with performances by Dave Koz, Gerald Albright, Richard Elliott, Rick Braun, and Pieces of a Dream. The evening will be hosted by MC Lightfoot. Food, drinks, and coolers are welcome. Ticket information is available at all Ticketmaster outlets or Wolf Creek box office at 1-800-653-8000.
Wake up, wake up, wake up, wake up. This is Spike Lee listening to my man, Ray Cornelius, up front, 91.9 WCLK.
Oh, super fly. You're gonna make your fortune by and by, but if you lose, don't ask no questions why. The only game you know is do or die. Hard to understand, but a hell of a man. This cat of the slum had a mind, wasn't dumb, but a weakness was shown, cause his hustle was wrong. His mind was his own, but the man lived alone.
You just heard music from the Curtis Mayfield masterpiece, Superfly. The song is featured on the iconic soundtrack of the Superfly film that defined a generation during the 1970s blaxploitation era. It starred Ron O'Neill as Youngblood Priest, a cocaine dealer who is trying to quit the underworld drug business. Grownish star Trevor Jackson is stepping into the role of Priest for a new remake of the film, which opens in theaters this weekend, and talked to Upfront during the black carpet premiere about playing such a beloved character.
So I gotta say, Burning Sands,
Grownish, yeah, and now Superfly. What made you say yes to this role? Because you're filling some pretty big shoes. Ron O'Neill was an icon, yeah. So what made you say yes?
Well, I think just the impact, like what you just said, how impactful it was on black culture. And I just wanted to be a part of it. My dad made me watch when I was little, and any older, you know, OGs that I have in my life, like Superfly, you know. So I definitely wanted to try and show my version of what Superfly is today. You know, it's very different from the 70s. And probably in the 70s, we wouldn't have been able to make this movie in Atlanta. So I think it's beautiful how far we've come, and I want to represent that.
How did you prepare for the role?
I did this accent. I really don't know what it is. People keep asking me, what's the accent? I didn't pick a place. I just wanted to be kind of Southern, and I just felt like that's how you would talk. And then I wanted to try and find a line between being loved and being feared, and I feel like that's what Priest is, and that's why he's so respected, because he's this guy that looks cool and like a nice guy, but he'll whoop ass if he has to. So I was just trying to walk that line for sure.
Jason Mitchell plays Priest's best friend Eddie and was totally honored to be a part of the film. So first of all, I gotta say congratulations, NWA, Mudbound, The Shy, and now Superfly. You're the guy with the golden touch. So how did you get involved with this particular project?
Well, actually, Joe Silva, the producer, he called me up and he asked me to be involved. And I don't know if people know how big that is, you know what I'm saying? But this dude did The Matrix, you feel what I'm saying? I'm like, of course I'm going to be involved. But at the same time, to be young and black and have somebody say, how do I put Superfly together? And then they think Jason Mitchell, and I'm like, you know what I mean? Like, how do you not accept that honor, you know what I mean? So that's dope, yeah.
Now, are you a fan of remakes?
Absolutely, absolutely. But I feel like, you know, I'm very opinionated on how they can be. You know what I mean? I'm going to say that. When it comes to this art, I'm very passionate, so I'm judgmental about it as well. But I think we did a great job. You know what I mean? I think we did a great job, yeah.
You got to ask, were you a fan of the original?
I definitely was. You know what I mean? And for a movie with such a small budget to have such a huge life, like Friday, you know what I mean? Who would have knew that movie made $300 million with that little budget, you know? Like, there's some things that you do for the culture, and this is specifically one of them.
Hip-hop star Big Bank Black talked to us about his character, Q Monroe, and how he got the role. So we're talking to Bank, man. Congratulations. Let's talk about your character, Q Monroe. Is that it?
Yeah. QV Monroe, that's me. That's me in real life. Okay. So let's talk a little bit about him. Well, I run a crew called the Snow Patrol, you know what I'm saying? And we play opposite of Priest, which is Trevor standing next to me. We play opposite of him. It's like we just got some beef. You know what I'm saying? It's all about the money, beef about the money. And I got little hotheads on my team that just want to get into it with Priest for no reason. I don't know why, but it's about to be a good movie, though.
Now, how did this project come to you?
Well, 21 Savage. That's a close friend of mine. He was originally drafted to play the role Juju. So he called me, and he called Joel Silver and X and told him that I would be the perfect person to play Q. Like, I originally was supposed to just only have 15, 20 minutes in the movie, but they stretched it out. So I guess I did good.
Now let's talk about the pace of the film, because I think you guys shot this in like 2 weeks, right? 3 weeks?
It didn't happen like this. No, we finished on March 6th, I think. We wrapped on March 6th. It's coming out June 13th. And we didn't shoot for 36 days. So this is the fastest turnaround I've ever seen in a movie.
Congratulations, and thank you so much. Outkast star Big Boy portrays the character Mayor Atkins. So congratulations to you, Big Boy. You're actually playing Mayor Atkins in the film. So tell us a little bit about him.
Mayor Atkins is the freaky, corrupt mayor of Atlanta. And we take pride in that. We didn't campaign on that, but I mean, he's a cool guy. Yeah.
Now, how did you get involved with the project?
The director right here, my guy. Come.
So director asked me to be a part of it.
Yeah. He said he wanted to be my mayor. I was like, absolutely.
Now, were you a fan of the original film?
Yeah, absolutely, man. From my dad to my uncles playing Superfly to Mac, Dolomite. Like, we grew up on it, you know what I mean? And for us to, you know, reimagine or remake a classic, remix, actually. I mean, it's dope, present day.
The 1972 Superfly film was originally directed by Gordon Parks Jr. Here's what Director X of the new remake says about stepping into those big shoes.
Gordon Parks Jr., of course. Well, Gordon Parks Sr. is an incredible, incredible artist. And this is a great film, really lasted for generations. Obviously, here we are making another one. So it's an honor.
How did this project come to you?
Joel Silver, Silver Pictures, they gave me a call, said they had a script for a Superfly. And I read the script. It was nothing like the original Superfly. And I told them I didn't want to do that. I wanted to make something based in the movie. I wanted to remake Superfly. And they agreed. And from there, we took that movie, broke it down, who are the characters, what are the story points, what are the things we have to do to make Superfly Superfly, and here we are. So if you're a real fan of Superfly, you'll be happy to know that Scatter's back, and George is back, and Cynthia's back, and Eddie's there, and Freddie, and you know, all those characters are back.
Now, what do you think is the takeaway message from this film?
I don't know if there's a takeaway message. We made something to entertain. Again, we're Joel Silver is producing. We're the only ones that have to say something. So what are you saying, sir? I'm saying have a good time. Come have a good time. Yell at the screen. Throw some popcorn. Do you know what I mean? Enjoy yourself. That's our number one responsibility, and that's what we aim to do. Of course, still being a black movie set in Atlanta, there's some current issues that we touch on, but the responsibility is to entertain.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Thank you guys for that exclusive coverage. Superfly opens nationwide in theaters this weekend. To see all of the black carpet interviews and to hear more from the actors and Director X, check out my upfront Superfly special airing today at 10 a.m. and 7 p.m. on CAUTV, Comcast 23. You can also watch it at WCLK.com.
Programming on WCLK is made possible in part by St. James Live. St. James Live and WCLK present keyboardist and composer Jonathan Fritzen, bringing his 10th anniversary tour to St. James Live. He has played with Gerald Albright, Boney James, and performed on Dave Koz's Jazz Cruise. Jonathan Fritzen live at St. James on Sunday, June the 17th. Doors open at 6 p.m., showtime at 7 p.m. St. James Live is located at 3220 Butner Road in Atlanta. Ticket information is available at stjamesliveatl.com.
World, it's the Love King Raheem Devon, and you're listening to Ray Cornelius on Upfront.
My mother once said to me, you know that friend of yours, the African prince? I absolutely have never had a friend as an African prince. Yes, we met him at that party. Andre.
You can be aristocratic without having been born into an aristocratic family.
I became familiar with Andre Leontief through Vogue magazine. He's like a black superhero.
They give a nod to the Godfather.
But you're giving us a futuristic James Brown moment on the shoulder.
He's the Nelson Mandela of couture, the Kofi Annan of what you got on.
His bombastic personality.
Saucy.
Oh, this is a look.
Gave people energy themselves and to take risks.
Why are you being so low-key?
When Andre tosses out all these different words, a lot of people think, oh my God, this guy is crazy.
People's heads went poof. He was so many things he wasn't supposed to be, and they couldn't get around it.
Fashion should have more suavity.
But why don't we see it on the street? But
darling, it depends on what street you're walking on and going down at what time of day.
That was a clip from the trailer of the new documentary, The Gospel According to Andre. It chronicles the life and career of the former Vogue magazine editor-at-large and one of the fashion industry's most influential icons, Andre Leon Talley. Upfront caught up with him to discuss the project, as well as his faith and admiration for Atlanta's own Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. He also opens up about working with Andy Warhol and for paving the way for other African Americans in fashion. This is an Upfront exclusive you won't hear anywhere else. Well, Andre Leon Talley, welcome to Upfront. How are you?
Thank you very much for having me. I'm happy. I'm very good.
Oh, wow. I'm so excited to have this conversation with you today. First of all, congratulations on your new film, The Gospel According to Andre. Got a chance to view it this weekend, and oh my gosh, bravo.
Oh, thank you.
An amazing film.
Oh, thank you. I'm so glad you liked it. Thank you so much.
Yes. So in the film, you open with a line that I thought was just so so key and so important to start off the film. Mm-hmm. And you say, I don't live for beauty and fashion. I live for style. Fashion is fleeting. Style remains. So explain a little bit about that, because I thought that was just so apropos to open the film with that line.
Well, fashion is trends. Trends are fashion. I don't talk trends. I never spoke trends. When people say, what are the trends for the season? I would say, I never speak trends. I hope that I stand for some sort of style legacy. Style remains. Style is what you are. Fashion is what you wear. Style is what you are, who you become, who you became, who you will continue to become. It is who you are in terms of your inner strength, your outwardly style, and the way you approach life, the way you interact with other people. That's what style is. Fashion is simply what you wear. Fashion can be a coat or jacket or pant or skirt or muumuu or caftan, but it's style. My style is my style. I wear caftans instead of suits. I have chosen to do that recently. I did wear suits when I was younger, but I now prefer caftans because that's what the indigenous men of North Africa wear every day. So I went to Marrakesh once years ago, and I saw the men were wearing these comfortable clothes, and I had my shirts made there to the floor, the way the men wear them to the floor, and they're collarless, and that's what I wear as a uniform. That is style. That is something that I wear every day as style. I don't change the style. Style is a consistent thing you have, whereas fashion, you might want to go in and out of the trend.
Wow. Now, faith and spirituality are a common thread that is weaved all throughout the film. You open with Kirk Franklin's revolution. You also end with Kirk Franklin's revolution. How has faith played a role in your success?
Very much so. It's paramount. It's paramount into my success. I grew up in a house of very religious people, my grandmother and her mother, her, my great-grandmother, when I was very young. So I grew up in a house, the foundation was built on faith. The church was the structure that was the nucleus of our lives. We went to church every Sunday, church culture. We went to church. We went to Bible school in the summer. We went to missionary meetings, everything. Everything about the church is where we centered our lives upon that and that strength of that. And the foundation is built upon my ancestors who were role models for me, because they were all church-going people, and church was an extended family. Family is a very important thing in church, and so when you have your family in church and you have your families connected to another family, it's an extended family. It's a larger family. So I would say uncles were very important to me. Aunts were very important to me. Cousins were very important to me, second and third cousins, because they all went to the same church. Everyone I knew as a young boy were parts or members of my family. They were blood kin to me. So most of the members of the church were my relatives. So it was a big family that was very much a place where I could go and receive love and receive education. And I learned to see the world through very strong values, and those values remain with me.
I have a dream that one day, this nation will rise up and live out the true meaning of its creed. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal.
When watching the film, I noticed that you always keep a photograph of Martin Luther King Jr. near you. I think you have a photograph of him in your home. How important was MLK to you?
Wonderful, very important to a young man growing up in the South. That was my main role model too when I grew up. I mean, Martin Luther King Jr. was everything. I mean, when he died, I remember sitting watching his funeral on our small black and white television that my father had paid for, sent money from D.C., and we sat there and watched it in our living room, a very small television. Actually, we kept that television. I don't think we ever had a color television in my home. I think when I left to go to college, my grandmother was still watching a black and white TV. I kind of think, yes. Maybe we got a color television maybe in the 80s. But we always looked at the same little black and white TV. We only had one TV, and I remember watching Martin Luther King's funeral on the TV and the people walking in the processional and the famous people, Harry Belafonte, Jackie Kennedy, and Mrs. King. So this is one of my favorite images, was Mrs. King on the cover of Life magazine. Just her face behind the veil. I remember that so vividly as a very important image of strength. And she wasn't weeping. She wasn't broken down. She wasn't mourning. She just seemed very strong. And he absolutely was a very important part of my upbringing. You know, what he stood for, nonviolence, what he did, his articulation, and his words and his writing.
If you're tuning in, you're listening to the great Andre Leon Talley. I want to ask you, you got an opportunity to work alongside Andy Warhol when he was building his iconic Interview magazine. Tell us about your relationship with him.
Well, he was a great, great boss. I loved Andy. He was a very wonderful, special man. I think Andy God broke the mold when he invented Andy, because in New York there's never been anyone like him since he died. He passed away. Andy was a man. He was artistic. He created beautiful art through looking at the world through the eyes of a child. He was a grown man, but he saw the world as an innocent child, curious about everything. I think that's what made him so strong, is because he was so tolerant of so many people. He was just, everyone was the same. He did not judge people. He did not treat people differently. I mean, you could be Princess Carolina Monaco as well as Grace Jones and walk into the factory and have the same prominence with Andy. Andy treated everyone equally, and I love that about him the most. He was a great friend of Jean-Michel Basquiat, the famous painter, he just loved people. He loved humanity. That's the most important thing one can say about him, is that he deeply loved humanity. This is what made him successful. He loved humanity, and he therefore had so many things to reach into for inspiration for his art and all of that, except when he did the so-called famous piss paintings. And he was doing canvases, and he would go in the back of the factory and have these canvases prepped by his assistants. And he would ask you to go and perhaps urinate on the painting. And he asked me that one day, and I said, no. I drew the line at the piss paintings. I said, no, I can't do the piss paintings.
Wow. Yeah. Now, you've been the only African-American man to have reached great heights in fashion and style. Did you ever feel any pressure? Was there ever a moment where it was like, wow, it's just me here?
I never thought that way. Interesting enough, I never had that thought once in my career, especially in the beginning. It's also in the middle stages, so much older. I never thought I'm the only person here. I didn't think that way. I never thought of black and white. I just thought of being, and I did have terrible things happen to me. Racist things did happen, and I was well aware of racism that existed. But as for an individual being the only person at the top, I just went to do my work every day, and I never had to think about those things. I just processed those things internally, racism, and then I just kept moving forward. I never felt the pressure of being the only black person. I felt that I'd been accepted for my talents and my gifts, not because I was a black man. If I was, well, so be it. But I didn't feel that ever in my career. I felt that they were accepting me because of who I was in terms of my knowledge and because of my talents and my unique approach to fashion and style, being a fashion editor.
Wow. Now, when did you know that you had arrived? Was there a moment, or was there an article or an interview where it was like...
I knew the moment I had arrived, from the moment I met Deanna Vreeland. When I arrived in New York in October of 1974 and met Deanna Vreeland and went to volunteer for her, I knew I'd arrived. I knew it was the beginning of everything. I knew that working with Mrs. Vreeland for 6 weeks was the pathway to success, and indeed it was. That is when I realized that I had done the right thing. I had sacrificed and come to New York to volunteer for her at the museum and made that huge, big risk, bold movement. And I knew it was everything, and I knew that it was going to be everything. But I didn't think about it that way, but I just knew. I knew I was doing the right thing, and it turned out to be the right thing. And from there, she got me my first job at Andy Warhol. She was the one who told Andy Warhol that you must have Andre in the factory. And I started working there in January 1975.
Now, in the film, you also mentioned that Studio 54 was where you went to dance, and there are so many images of you dancing there, and one in particular that caught my eye because she's my favorite is the photograph of you dancing with Diana Ross. How did that come about?
Well, Diana Ross, I knew through the factory. I knew Diana Ross at the factory. I knew Diana Ross at the museum. I knew Diana Ross at the party. So naturally, when one met her at parties, I mean, I was just privileged to working with Andy Warhol and Mrs. Vreeland to get invited to the parties. And I'd met Diana Ross at Interview Magazine, and I had done a cover story with her, and I also had met her at the Metropolitan Museum, the annual Costume Institute Gala. So it was just a necessary for that. We would just dance at 54. It was just... That was just part of it organically. It was organic. It was an organic moment.
Yeah. Wow. What did you learn about Andre during this film process? I'm sure that it was, you know, you had to compile a lot of information.
I learned to be trusting of Kate Novak, the director. She was a great director. It's her first film, full directorial debut, and I learned to trust her and to be open. I learned to sit back and be aware and know that she would create something that would be special. I learned to trust. I learned to be patient. I learned more patience. Having someone follow you around with the camera can be annoying. The cameraman can be annoying. And I learned patience.
Is there something that you, a bit of advice that you would say to Andre Leon Talley, the 18-year-old or 19-year-old, or the Andre Leon Talley that when he first arrived to New York, what advice would you give to him?
None. I did everything right. I did everything I felt that was right. You take risk and you're afraid. You hide your insecurities by clothing, by fashion, not by style. I certainly didn't have style at 17 or 18. You hide your insecurities through the armor of your fashion choices, and you just rise up, hold your head up high, look people in the eye, and go forward.
Well, Mr. Andre Leon Talley, thank you so much for your time. And
talking to you, and I'm very happy that I hope that Atlanta will love the film as much as people in New York and Los Angeles love it, and elsewhere also, I hope, in the country.
Absolutely.
I think this is a good film for this time. I think people want to see films like this that are positive, uplifting, inspiring.
Well, thank you so much. It's a beautiful film. A lot of times I had to stop and pause because there were so many moments that I was just that I didn't know about you, but then I also learned things about myself. And
this is wonderful.
Yeah,
wonderful.
And it's definitely a film I think that will inspire everyone to really pursue their dreams and to go after their dreams at all costs. You know.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you so very
much.
All right,
I appreciate it.
All right, have a good one. The Gospel, According to Andre, opens on Friday, June 22nd at Atlanta's Regal Terra Cinema. Well, that'll do it for today's show. I'd really like to thank all of my special guests, the cast and director of Superfly, Trevor Jackson, Jason Mitchell, Big Boy, Big Bang Black, and Director X, as well as the one and only Andre Leon Talley. I would also like to thank my engineer, Jami Wellman, and you. Please join us next Saturday, June 23rd, for another exciting edition of Upfront, Inside Atlanta's Entertainment Industry. Happy Saturday, Atlanta.
Upfront, Inside Atlanta's Entertainment Industry has been brought to you by Atlanta's Jazz Station, 91.9 FM, WCLK, an NPR member-supported station.